This is the New Talk, the Bob Davis Podcasts. We're up to podcast 518. It's hard to believe that we are nearing the end of June already in the summer of 2016. It feels like it just started. And we're going to talk about the world falling apart in podcast 518. Yeah, well, one of the things that I'm going to talk about here is I was going to do this podcast from the deck, but it's a little windy out there, and it, you know, you wouldn't notice it with if you were just standing there, but with microphones, it creates problems. But we had a great storm this weekend, and it's because it's summer, and in the summer in the Midwest, we get lots of heat and humidity. It was like 95 or something Saturday, and then we had the storm, and of course, with the heat and humidity also comes the storm, and the storms mean high winds, and I heard the forecast, you know, very strong straight-line winds and hail and rain and high winds and tornadoes mean water damage, it means hail damage, it means damage to the exterior of your home. And with the storms and the storm damage, once the sun comes out and the storm clears, people are going to be knocking at your door. And this happens every time, and we hear about it all the time in the contracting business. They can give you a great deal on storm damage repair. And then as you're having this conversation with these people, and they're good, too. I mean, they know how to, you know, talk to you. You're like, I don't know this person. I don't know who they are. And often they will demand half the payment to fix your house up front, and then they disappear. And then you don't know what to do. Or sometimes they ask for full payment. Well, I'll tell you what you do. And I've talked about this, introducing a new sponsor to the Bob Davis Podcasts. You call a name that you know, and that would be Cairo Contracting. Why do I say a name that you know? First of all, let me give you the number, 612-702-2357. Ed Cairo grew up in St. Paul and Bloomington. Cairo Contracting is a Better Business Bureau accredited business. They've been around for 15 years. So because Ed Cairo is a local guy, you know he's not going anywhere. Residential and commercial roofing, siding, gutters, and window repair and installation. And yeah, Cairo Contracting are storm damage specialists. A good example is hail. I've talked about this a couple of times, and I'll get more examples going forward. But if you get hail damage to the shingles on your roof, they will start to deteriorate layer by layer so that you get leaks, and then you have bigger and bigger problems. So you have to get it addressed if you have hail damage on your roof. For 15 years, Cairo Contracting, again, Ed grew up in St. Paul and Bloomington, residential and business exterior remodeling experts and storm damage specialists. Cairo Contracting is the name you know when it comes to storm damage repair and exterior remodeling, residential and commercial. If you want to get the numbers, you click on that banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcasts.com. The picture of a house in Edina that they just finished, which looks great. Cairo Contracting, 612-702-2357. Once again, 612-702-2357, Cairo Contracting. I was going to do this podcast from the deck, and at sundown, it was pretty nice out there. It was very still, beautiful. The sky perfectly clear. And the sky is still clear. It is about midnight. And I can't go out there because it's too windy. And if you listen, I've got the window open in the broadcast bunker so we can hear the wind in the trees a little bit. But I can't even go out on the flat because it's just too windy. And I realized I've got to invest in a couple of those windsock things that they use for microphones in movies and on TV and stuff to deaden the sound of the wind, because wind is the bane of my existence. So we will not be broadcasting live from the deck, which is a shame because it is beautiful out there, and that wind sound is just fabulous. One of my favorite sounds is the sound of the wind in the trees. It's just... there's nothing like it, especially in the summer when you just kind of lay there and just listen to the wind in the trees. And what's really cool is I live near some power lines, and the wind kind of sings through the power lines as well, and that's always nice. But sometimes, you know, these summer nights are really, really quiet, and you can sit out there, and it's fantastic, but that's not going to happen tonight. And we're going to probably hear some planes coming in too as well. But I got the window open, so it's not going to bother me as much if I know that the window's open and you know the window's open and you can hear all that. So this was the week and the weekend, the aftermath of the British exit vote from the European Union, and there have been all sorts of reactions right and left, and it seems like people are talking about it, or at least writing about it and talking about it on television ad infinitum. We talked about it on the radio show this weekend, Andrew Davis and I. My son did one. We did a podcast, which, you know, people, it's the picture of him and I on the front of it, and I took parts of that podcast where he talked extensively about trade, and then made a, you know, cut that down to the radio show, which actually worked out really well. But in listening to him and arguing with him since, I have come to conclude that this is almost a generational divide as well, because there are a number of us who can remember what life was like before the EU, and then there are a number of us who don't remember what life was like before the EU, going back to what, 1991. So if you're a millennial, you were born in 91, which my son was. 90, 91, 89, 87, most of those people do not remember a world without the European Union. And they are plainly just freaking out. Now, for this podcast, I really had two choices. I could sit down and I could really sort of think this through and do a podcast that talked a little bit more specifically about the reaction and giving you quotes and sources and things that I like to do. Or I could just talk this, which is why I wanted to do it out on the deck, because I just wanted to talk this out, this podcast out. And opening with this generational divide is a good thing, because this is an example of how sometimes age and treachery can overcome youth and, you know, enthusiasm. Because I do remember what life was like before the European Union. And I think that the European Union has been challenged from the beginning for a number of reasons, which I alluded to in both the radio show and the podcast, and also the radio show last weekend that we did together. And boy, when you say stuff like that, you get a response from people. The people that are fearful for this thing are really upset. The Remain people in England, at least according to the reports that I've seen, are really upset, and they're writing things that are really just nasty, calling people who made speeches in favor of leave, you know, hateful, and this is a hateful situation, and so forth. But it's interesting, because if you actually look at what is going on, and this is why I want to talk this out, as opposed to having written script and even outlining it, because when I talk it out a little bit, I think it's time to do that. I think that when I do that, then I can sort of follow whatever thoughts come into my mind about this. But I don't think people realize, because the way that I don't think that people realize the situation that the European Union is in on a lot of levels, that they have put this on the people who voted to leave as though they are rubes at best, and at worst, they're just horrible, hateful people who just don't like anyone but people who look like them, and on and on and on, which I find to be hysterical. And I don't mean funny. I think they're just being hysterical about it. You know, the European Union has a big problem, in my view, and I said this from the beginning, and I remember taking crap from people saying it at the very beginning of it. I said, you know, what are they trying to do? Well, they're trying to create a federal system, and they're trying to have what the United States has, and it's going to be a good thing, because people are going to get together, and they're going to be able to go from country to country without going through borders, and, you know, it's going to be great. And the idea was, you know, a single Eurozone currency. And I remember saying at the time, well, they're doing that, but they're not doing it by creating a representative government. They're not creating a representative federal government with a representative constitution that guarantees rights and so forth. And I remember, don't you remember the big fight over, and, you know, some younger people will not remember it, but I do, the ridiculous Euro constitution that there was a discussion about. And I don't even know if it ever passed or if it did pass. But the number one problem of the European Union is they tried to create, it was a common market. And I never had a problem with a common market. And as I said in these shows with my son, I mean, the whole reason for European project came at the close of World War II, when Europeans in particular wanted to avoid another situation as developed after World War II. After World War I, which caused World War II. And that was, you know, different countries and different power centers and different, their feeling was if France and Germany in particular could get together, create a common market, then it would increase the chances of peace and trade generally mitigates for peace. That's basically the idea. And it spread into this European project of creating a federation of states of Europe, the United States of Europe. You may recall those words were actually used. And then when the currency came into being, everybody was nervous. And, you know, I remember saying, this is not going to end well. And my friends were like, it's going to be the biggest, it's going to be bigger than the dollar. And it was for a while bigger than the dollar. But Europe has some economic problems that are not being addressed. And I think I would quote none other than Alan Greenspan, who certainly isn't any, libertarian type. A lot of people think Alan Greenspan caused most of the problems that we deal with economically because of his leadership at the Fed. But Alan Greenspan is very interesting. Often the way he talks, he literally does talk out of both sides of his mouth. He said, and this is what was quoted when he said, this is the worst thing since, and maybe even worse than 2008. Okay. He said, there's nothing like it, including the crisis of October 19th, 1987, when the Dow went by a record of amount, something like 23%. And I thought that was the bottom of all potential problems. This has a corrosive effect that will not go away. Now, most of that was quoted worldwide. Oh, well, Alan Greenspan thinks it's terrible. The former Fed chairman said that the root of the British problem is far more widespread. He said the result of the referendum will almost surely lead to the Scots trying to get out and resurrect the Scottish independence effort. But then he said that the euro currency is the immediate problem. While the euro and the eurozone were major steps in a movement toward European political integration, it's failing. And then he said, Brexit is not the end of a set of problems, which I always thought were going to start with the euro, because the euro is in a very serious problem in that the southern part of the eurozone is being funded by the northern part and the European Central Bank, said Greenspan, which is literally the problem. So you have the UK, France, and particularly Germany funding governments which have spent themselves into the poorhouse in Italy and Spain and Greece in particular. And what systems, what kinds of economic policies led to that? Well, it was socialism. It was the effort to provide, for lack of a better term, it was socialist ideas about economics. They very large welfare institutions in Italy and Greece and Spain, very much government intervention and very much a lot of borrowing by governments to continue to maintain the pension state and the pensions of government workers and the jobs of government workers, while at the same time trying to ameliorate all the problems that individuals had in the private sector and so forth and so on. And what has happened since those countries very nearly collapsed is that they have been funded in some way, shape, or form by the northern part of Europe. And the euro is struggling as partially as a result of that. But then the ECB, the European Central Bank, has also engaged in something called negative interest rates. So you have worldwide very slow economic growth. you have central banks all over the world trying to intervene by either 0% interest rates or near 0% interest rates, as in the case of the United States. And you have companies not really making a lot of money. You have the Eurozone not really growing that fast. And you have countries like Britain struggling because of that. But in addition to that, struggling because of increasing regulations. There's lots of components to this that suggest that the Eurozone and the Euro, the European, experiment, the Euro Federation, wasn't being very well run. And I think it leads back to the primary problem with the Eurozone, which is that they do not have a representative federal government. And they do not have a federal government that has been agreed upon constitutionally by the member states. And I think it becomes a sovereignty issue. And when you're talking about great countries like Germany and France and the United Kingdom, but especially the United Kingdom, they won World War II, right? I mean, their view is we were victors in World War II because we got on the right side of history. We have a long history of being independent. And why should we, Britons, continue down this road? So the other thing that was written, and I'm jumping around a lot, but one of the things that was written was, it's difficult to be the first person to leave the party. But it gets easier as each person begins to leave the party. So Britain may be the first. They most certainly will not be the last. Yeah, this is a topic of conversation. In fact, I had dinner with Greg Ryan this weekend, and we ended up talking about this Europe thing for a long time. And we also talked about the fact that almost everyone now has either gotten their AC checked or they're not worried about it. I haven't even turned mine on, but I often mention Ryan Plumbing and Heating to check your AC before you turn it on, because sometimes you might have a problem that you're unaware of, but that's kind of past. So what I want everyone to know is, just because it's summer, your plumbing problems may not go away. And if you have emergency plumbing issues, call Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They do quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan Plumbing is metro-wide from St. Paul, which means they can get someone to you wherever you are. Golden Valley, Plymouth, where was I in the East Metro recently? South St. Paul, West St. Paul, all over the place. They can get plumbers to you. For four generations, they've been on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol. Again, for emergency service, think Ryan Plumbing and Heating. 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Because when it comes to keeping all your systems operating, running right, especially these days at home or business, when you have plumbing or heating problems or air conditioning problems, you want reliable service. That means Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And if you go to ryanplumbing.com, the one thing that can go bad a lot these days is the water heater. And Ryan Plumbing is offering a deal through ryanplumbing.com for water heater replacement, $150 off. Check it out, ryanplumbing.com. Now, before I move on to what I think is the big takeaway from this, I just want to say that in the discussions I've had with my son and other people about this, everybody's, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? What's going to happen? The markets crashed. The Dow was down 600 on Friday. This is the beginning of the end. I brought up the central banks, and I brought up the situation with business. Now, if you listen to the mainstream media, and if you listen to the political leaders in the United States and Europe, they will have you believe that we have had this incredible, we're having a fantastic, things are going very well economically. But they are not going very well economically. You know, in the United States, 95 million people remain out of the workforce. The new jobs being created are not real high-quality jobs, and that is also true in the UK. France has been in a recession for a long time. They're having a Japan moment. Germany has certainly had a better time of it due to a lot of their fine exports and industry, things like printing presses and machinery, things that Germany does very well. But Europe is not growing, you know, dynamically, and neither is the United States. And this is the big secret nobody wants the average person to know. But the average person knows it because we have tightened our belts and we are living our lives on a much lower level, most of us, than we were before, in the sense that we're not, you know, using credit as much. We're not consuming as much. And it's always amusing to me to see people talk about, well, you know, suddenly consumers are consuming again. Well, certainly not at the levels they were in the 90s, and certainly not at the levels they were in the 80s. But that's another podcast. Suffice it to say that the economic situation worldwide and the economic situation in the Eurozone isn't great. And this is one of the reasons when you start putting pressure on the Eurozone or countries like you did with the Syrian problem, with the refugees leaving war-torn Syria and heading into Europe, which is another podcast also, because everyone just points to it and says, you know, we shouldn't let those people in. On the other hand, has anybody bothered to take some time and actually look into what actually caused the Syrian civil war and who's responsible for it and what would have happened had we intervened or not intervened? What were the reasons and so forth? This is a war in Syria. And as I have said for years, people look at the Middle East, myself included, and they say, why do we even care? We shouldn't even have anything to do with that part of the world. But it is a freeway to Europe. And the Syrian refugees showed very clearly how unrest in the Middle East or war, mass amount of war or refugees, or war-producing refugees in Europe, the Middle East, can seriously affect Europe in negative ways. Well, in my view, the immigration problem is just something, it's a problem, a strategic problem that put a lot of pressure on, an institution, the Eurozone, which was already in trouble to begin with. They've been in trouble with Italy. They've been in trouble with the Spain situation. They bailed out Greece. There was a big fight about that. The ECB has been struggling for 5 years now to try to address economic issues, just as the Federal Reserve in the United States. What are they trying to do? They're trying to restart the economy. They're trying to get back to economic growth, and they all are Keynesians. They all view government stimulation as a key thing, government intervention and government stimulation of the demand side as the key way to restart the economy. So we have central banks with big balance sheets, all sorts of quantitative easing programs, basically printing money, even though the Treasury Department prints the money, but basically producing more and more money, loaning money to banks at low rates. And the money is not getting out there because there's no markets, because we're not stimulating the supply side. We're trying to get consumers to buy. And consumers are leery of buying. So I guess what I'm saying is, despite all of the intentions of these highly educated economists and so-called elitists, people are maybe smarter than we give them credit for. Yeah, you know, individually we're rubes, but maybe collectively we're a little smarter than we are thought to be, in that we know the economy is not going great. It's not the end of the world. I mean, the country is not going to hell in a handbasket, as I have said many times. But in terms of prosperity, in terms of the kind of prosperity some of us saw in the 80s and in the 90s, we're not seeing that, and we would like to know why. And I think people are beginning to say, we're going to make a change if you guys don't fix this. And that's what's going on in Europe, and it may happen in the United States. Now, having said all that, I just want to say one thing. Everybody said it was the end of the world. They're talking about the markets falling apart and what's going on and what's happening here. And, you know, a couple things I didn't know. First of all, you have all the people remaining from the Remain campaign running around predicting the end of the world. That's going on. And of course, the media in the United States is covering it as though it is the end of the world. Because why? I think a lot of them have never been, they weren't adults during the time that the EU was formed. They don't remember a world without the EU. And as I said to my son, guess what? There's a lot of people in the world that are not part of the EU. The United States, you know, Switzerland, you know, countries like that, as well as countries that would never be in the EU. China, you know, countries in the Pacific and so forth. So the idea that if the EU somehow dissolves over the next 5 years, because they don't address their problems, why would that be viewed as a bad thing? And in particular by the financial community? Well, a couple of things. You're going to see the markets come back because there's going to be buying opportunities, number one. Number two, the British pound came back to slightly above where it was before the whole thing started by the end of Friday. And the British markets, with the exception of the FTSE, basically also returned. And, you know, as one writer put it, why the rebound? Partly because the blue chip index is made up of companies with significant international exposure, which report their earnings in dollars. And also because the head of the the Bank of England, the British Central Bank, acted quickly to reassure investors that the Bank of England was ready to step in if the sell-off became too severe. It would be crazy to say that Friday was not a bloodbath in the financial markets, but once the dust had started to settle, there was already a sense that things were not to be as bad as feared. So the second part of this, the other shoe that will drop, is the fact that there will be investments. As I heard the two guys on a show that was on before mine this weekend on my affiliate in Minneapolis, we're talking about trading, and they said, you know, we're also, yeah, certainly we can talk about Brexit, but we're also concerned about what the U.S. Federal Reserve does, and what we're concerned about, you know, inflation, and we're concerned about financial issues in the United States. We're concerned about what's happening with China. You know, we're talking about lots of other things going on in the world besides the British exit. The other thing somebody pointed out, and I don't know if these are correct numbers or not, but Britain only accounts for about 14% of the world economy. If that, and the trade with Europe is about only 15, 16, 17, it's in the teens percent of Britain's GDP. So what we're talking about here is 0.5% in the world economy. And is it as this writer, and I threw the article away, so I don't have it, but as this writer said, that's a rounding error. So just relax until we see what happens. So there's that piece. And I think that's an important thing for people to think about, because you're going to hear a lot, especially from the media. Because why? Because the storyline is that this is a disaster. First of all, this isn't even a binding vote. You may have heard that. England has to actually file papers with the EU at the earliest around Christmas 2016 to withdraw. And some people don't think they will. I believe they will, but they have to file papers and then it has to be negotiated. So this isn't going to happen tomorrow. And the financial markets will adjust, and the financial markets will find other investments and other opportunities, and it remains to be seen, and it will take some years before we know whether this is a good thing for England or not. Meanwhile, there are other states which may withdraw from the EU for various other reasons. This now gives Greece, a fair reason to say, listen, this is not working out to our advantage. We're better off going it alone, or Italy, or, you know, Spain, saying, you know, we might be able to get better terms for the debt that we have, and we might have more control over our currency and what's going on in our countries if we're able to exit the euro. So the euro project is in trouble. Now, when it comes to defense, when it comes to strategic partnerships that go beyond trade, I think some of those concerns are well-founded. But let me just say this. Structures like NATO, alliances like the United States and the United Kingdom, Germany and France, which we have also, trade relationships as well as defense relationships with, and other countries, you know, countries that are in NATO, are not affected by this. NATO is not affected by anything in the EU. It's a separate treaty regime. It's a defense treaty regime. It has nothing to do with the rest of the EU. That's the first thing. The second thing is that British and American defense interests, and it could be argued that the United Kingdom is the strongest military in the EU. You know, even France doesn't hold a candle to the English ability to project, primarily because of carriers and air forces and things. And so the UK is generally considered to be the strongest ally of the United States. And our defense arrangements with the United Kingdom are not going to be affected by their withdrawal from the EU. More than anything, I'm sure that was the first call that the Joint Chiefs and the President and others probably called England first and said, okay, let's talk about what this means. And I'm sure that they're continuing those discussions. So the defense arrangements are questionable. Where does this have an effect? It has an effect, as I have argued with my son, and he argues this, and I think it's a good point. A strong European Union is a good counterweight to Russia, which continues to try to expand its interests. So this may not bode well for the Ukraine. It may not bode well for some Eastern European states. But I don't know that things bode. I don't know that things were very good for the Ukraine to begin with, because the Russians are already, you know, trying to cleave away pieces of eastern Ukraine all over the past year and a half to 2 years. So we'll have to watch that situation very closely. And then the other piece is China. That if the EU as a counterweight to Chinese economic growth and Chinese expansion disappears, then that might make it more difficult for us to address or deal with the potential for Chinese expansion. So that's really the boundaries of the things that you need to be concerned about when it comes to the Brexit. But this is not going to affect American domestic economic policy. This is probably not going to have very much effect on American foreign policy. And I think if the president does something stupid like pivots to Germany or anything else, and you're going to see that reported, I think that would be a big mistake. I don't think anybody should do anything. I don't think anybody should get involved in it. I don't think any of these officials in our government should be saying we strongly stand with the EU or not. I think we should stay out of it and let these countries, the EU and the UK, figure out how they're going to figure this out and how they're going to work it out, because they will. That's the idea. So that's that. Now, before I go, I just want to say that, and I have had this conversation two or three different times, and it's hard for me to get this across, and I did talk about it in a podcast, and I talked about it on the radio show as well. I think people are upset about the encroaching power of government, because I think they feel it. And when I'm talking about our regulations and efforts to do away with things by governments like Airbnb, and to try to force Uber out, and to try to, you know, to try to, in you know, place the government in between markets and people, and you know, so-called nudge laws that that give people incentives to do things like not smoke or whatever. And I think over the last 20 years, in the last 10 years in particular, we have seen governments become more and more and more overbearing. But I don't think people have the language for it. Number one, if you say that the government is becoming overbearing, well, then you're one of those people, right? But in some ways, the people in Ferguson and Baltimore who felt over-policed, let's just say that, even though that's a vast, you know, it would be exaggerating. What do they call that? When you exaggerate to the negative, it's a vast diminishment of what those people felt in terms of being oppressed by police forces. Let's just put it that way. But they're saying the same thing in a lot of instances that other people who say, don't take my guns, you know, in an odd sort of bizarre way. The protesters at the Federal Reserve in Oregon were kind of saying the same things that Black Lives Matter say, even though those two people would never be caught dead sitting at a table at McDonald's together. And I think it's the same with the people in the United Kingdom and the people in Europe and all over the world who are getting tired of being told what to do. And I will just, because this came up today too as well, you know, you can listen to the podcast I did with Mark Korn, who's the mayor of Oak Grove in Minneapolis. It's a suburb of Minneapolis and St. Paul, who is trying to fight the Met Council. And, you know, one of the things that he discovered in his research was that state statutes give the Met Council, which is a development is supposed to be a development, council of unelected, I refer to them as suzerains in our metropolitan area, who run the airports and run the buses and the trains, and have basically accreted tons of power over the last 20 years and have statutory authority to the extent that they can tell towns and cities what they can do and what they can't do. You can't say no to the Met Council's planning. And Mark came up with this idea of saying, hey, why don't we just repeal these statutes that give them statutory power over individual towns and villages? And I think, writ small, that is the problem with all of these trade regimes and these supranational agencies, for lack of a better term, these supranational trade institutions and negotiated institutions, up to and including NATO, that are causing problems because they're dictating to countries or individuals, and in the case of the EU, passing laws and getting involved in treaties that people at the most basic level don't seem to have a vote in. And I don't think we have the language anymore, because if you say I don't like the federal government, then you're one of those crazy, anti-government people. But I think finally, people across the world are starting to see that governments can make catastrophic decisions and that people elected to office are not geniuses. And often they are much less than geniuses. They tend to act sometimes like village idiots as opposed to geniuses. And we are looking for something. And I don't think people have the language to say what it is that they're looking for, because I don't think we know. We're at a crossroads in history, and this is really the final point. We're at a crossroads in history. There's a lot of things coalescing in the time that we live in. And when I say that, I don't mean today. I don't mean next week. I'm not predicting the future, but I'm just telling you, based on what I know about society, that there are many things coalescing right at this time. And a lot of those things are hard to understand. They're hard to even define, but they are coalescing. And as they coalesce, they're creating disruptions all over the place. And they seem to be, and I got into a big fight with this with my son too, because you can't substantiate this ridiculous, decentralized theory that you have. I think personally that they seem to be disrupting central power wherever it is. And because what seems to be happening is people seem to be saying, I am sick and tired of your telling me that to sit down and shut up. I am sick and tired of you, Mr. Government, telling me that you know more than I know, that you know better than I do, that you know what kind of medical treatment that I need, that you know that I need to follow these certain rules so that I can have a firearm, or I need to follow these certain rules environmentally, or that I need, even down to, in my town, you have to separate the stuff that you recycle. So recycling becomes this ridiculous chore that I have to do every week, that I have to make sure I don't put certain things in the recycling or they won't take it. Life is becoming complicated because governments keep getting in the middle of it. And I keep asking, what is it that they do? What do they do for us? Yes, the roads are nice and, we seem to be able to keep some order, and I guess they're protecting us. But when you see things like Orlando and you look at intractable problems like terrorism, and you see issues like the border situation, people are starting to ask, what is it that the government is doing for me? And this is where I think the basis of these votes are going to come from. And I got to tell you, if I'm Hillary Clinton right now, despite her advantage in the polls, I got to be thinking, this is a precarious perch that she's on. Let me just close with this. There's a thing called the Bradley effect in polling. And this is when Bill Bradley, who is a very popular, very well-spoken, moderate Democrat senator from New Jersey and former basketball player Bill Bradley. And Bill Bradley had it all going on. I mean, he was very intelligent. He was very well informed on the issues, and he decided to run for president. And people didn't vote for him. They said they were going to, but they didn't vote for him. And they call that the Bradley effect, when the polls are just flat out wrong about something. And this appears to be what has happened in Britain. You have a decisive victory for Leave, 52%. And the polls all showed the reverse. They showed roughly 50 to 49%, 51 to 49% would vote to stay. And, you know, I realize that in the United States, the polls and Hillary Clinton versus Trump, by the way, neither one of them have been nominated by their mainline parties yet, aren't so good for Trump. But I don't trust the polls right now, because when electorates start to shift, it is usually unpredictable. And usually the outcome cannot be predicted even with polling. So hang on to your hats. Everything is about to come loose. More up everything, because batten down the hatches, because the storm is coming in and she's a blower. Thanks once again to the digital sponsor, the BobDavisPodcasts.com, Alpha Systems. So pilots want to be safe on takeoffs and landings. Most pilots tell you they want to get there, but they want to get there safely. What does Alpha Systems do? They make the revolutionary angle of attack indicator, which is a visual indicator of your angle of attack on final approach, and it really, really saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator. It's FAA approved. They will be at the EAA Air Show. Alpha started the angle of attack revolution. Check it out. Just click on that banner at the top of the Bob Davis podcast page with the picture of the AOA system at the BobDavisPodcasts.com. Don't forget, Ryan Plumbing and Heating can take care of your emergency plumbing needs. And just because it's summer doesn't mean that stuff's going to go away. 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs, too. They can get a plumber near you. And if you go to ryanplumbing.com right now, they're also running a special on water heaters. You can save up to $150. And that's another thing that goes out these days. More. When I was growing up, they lasted like 25 years, and now they go out every 5 or 6 years. So if you have a water heater problem, visit ryanplumbing.com and they will hook you up. And it being summer, as we have discussed several times in this podcast, don't forget that the big storms come, and with them comes the water damage and the hail damage, the damage you have to get fixed, the damage you have insurance for. And that's why you call a name that you know to get it done and get it done right. That is Cairo Contracting, 612-702-2357. Ed Cairo grew up in St. Paul in Bloomington. They are Better Business Bureau accredited, and they are storm damage specialists. Cairo Contracting for 15 years, 612-702-2357. They're the name that you can trust. Cairo Contracting, 612-702-2357. Now, just before I go, and I hate doing all these announcements at the end of the podcast, I'm going to start doing them at the beginning because I feel like I'm rushing, but I have an email sign up, and you can sign up for the Bob Line, which is a newsletter I'm going to put out at the Bob Davis Podcast. It's at the top of the page on the right side. You see email sign up for the newsletter, the Bob Line newsletter. You sign up. And the reason we have to do this is because I can't just send you this thing if I have your email address. I need to get a new email address. I need to get a new list so we can make the whole thing work right and I can syndicate literally the newsletter. And it's going to be like a magazine with pictures and stuff like that, I think. I haven't written one yet, but it's going to be great. I'm like Trump. It's going to be great. So sign up for the newsletter. I really appreciate that. And we can start building an email list at thebobdavispodcast.com so I can communicate with you aside from the podcast and let you know what's going to be on the podcast and so forth and so on. And thank you for listening to Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. These are syndication services for the Bob Davis Podcast, blogtalkradio.com. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast radio show on AM 1280 The Patriot in Minneapolis and through GCNlive.com. And I really appreciate the liking and the sharing and the favoriting and the following on Facebook and Twitter. And of course, my favorite, Instagram. I love the gram, and I am the Bob Davis Podcast on Instagram. And also thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command. It is heading up to the mechanics this week for an oil change and to have the front end checked. So your donations are really, really, really appreciated at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to podcast 518, the Bob Davis Podcasts.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom of